Welcome back to Rami Yomi. We are now beginning the Halachas of Talmud Torah. Very exciting. We're beginning a whole new section of the Rambam. And we are going to move ahead right now into the introduction, as we have in the beginning of any new section of the Rambam. He's going to tell us which mitzvahs he's covering. So in this mitzvah, Yesh Beklalan Shtei Mitzvahs Ha'aseh, there are two mitzvahs that are positive mitzvahs, V'zehu Parton, and the two of them are Lilmo Torah, to learn Torah, and l'chavi milamdev yoda, and to honor those who study it and know it. Uvir shtei mitzvos elu b'prakim elu. We're going to cover those two mitzvos when it comes up in the next number of prakim. And it's just important to keep that in mind, that these are the two mitzvos asay that are going to be covered, and we're actually going to point out a little bit later why some, or at least one specific lotase was not included, even though others felt it should have been. But we're going to get jumping right in at the very beginning. Says the Rambam, and much of this is actually from the Gemara in Kiddushin, specifically the latter part, but women, slaves, these are non-Jewish slaves, and children are all potter, they're all not obligated, they do not have the obligation from learning Torah, and a father does have the obligation not only to learn Torah, which we haven't gotten to yet, but he has the obligation to teach his son Torah while the child is a child still. The passage specifically tells you to do that. And the woman is not chayav too, the mother is not chayav to teach her child, or her son specifically, the Torah. Why? Because she herself is not chayav, therefore she is not chayav to teach her son. A number of important points to make here. Many poskim point out that women are chayavos, not only that it's mutter for them to, you know, which we're going to see, right? Obviously, you know, it only says they're not chayav, it doesn't say that it's usur. We're going to get to other parts later on where the Rambam will say things are usur, and how that compares to things today or not. But the Rambam very, very clearly is saying that they're not chayavos, they're not obligated. Many poskim would point out that they are obligated to learn, the chayavos to learn halachos that they themselves must fulfill. And one thinks about how much Torah is required to be learned simply to know the halachos of what must be fulfilled. That is a massive component of Talmud Torah. And Limud Torah that is required. So on a very basic level, there is a ton there to focus on. And again, that's not the end of this conversation. Just pointing that out, the many poskim on the very outset point that there is an obligation, not just a heter, but there's an obligation, chiyuv, to master Limud Torah of the halachos that one must fulfill. That's all. Okay. Number two is why does the Rambam specifically point out that the son has chayav to be taught first here? Why not that they themselves have to be, a man has to study himself? No, because the Torah specifically mentions it that way. Right? Teach your sons. And that's why the Rambam is focusing first on the son. A couple of other important points. The Shulchan Aruch points out that a woman is required to show the child how to perform mitzvos for sure. Even though it says here, teach his son Torah, she would have to teach her son and both, all of her children really how to fulfill and doing mitzvahs. Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful piece and a tribute to the Rebbetzin of Talna, where he speaks about his mother's impact on his own religious experience and his life. Most of all, I learned, I'm quoting now, that Judaism expresses itself not only in the formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me that there is a flavor, a scent, and a warmth to mitzvos. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of his hand resting upon my frail shoulders without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence. I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive. Okay? And then he points out that the laws of Shabbat, for instance, were passed on to me by my father. They were part of Musar Avicha. The Shabbos, as a living entity, as a queen, was revealed to me by my mother. It is a part of Toras Imecha. Okay, the fathers knew much about the Shabbat. The mothers lived the Shabbat. experienced her presence and perceived her beauty and splendor. So, and there are plenty of other pieces like this where Gedolim talk about their mothers in this type of way. Soloveitchik talks about this, and again, this is going off of that Shla, which says you're quite right that the woman does not, the mother does not have to teach her son Torah per se, but she does have a chiyuv to teach them how to perform mitzvahs, how to live a Jewish life. And the Sefer Chinuch points out, goes even further there, says that it's true that they don't have a chiyuv, but mothers should endeavor that their children shouldn't be like common people. In other words, he's saying you should try to teach your child, even if you're not chayavos, to teach your child to learn Torah and to be engaged in Limud Torah and Devarim Tshuva Kedusha, so that they don't end up in a way that you wouldn't want. Okay, good. Halacha beis, k'shem shechayav adam l'lamed es b'no, kach hu chayav l'lamed es men b'no, sh'nehem ar v'adabim v'nechol v'nei v'nechol. Pasuk Dvarim points out that we have to teach your sons and your son's sons, namely your grandchildren. So the same way that the person is supposed to teach his son, he has to teach his grandson as well. V'lo b'no v'en b'no v'l'ba, not only your son and your grandson only, right? Not only those two cases, even though that's what the pasuk specifically points out. Ela mitzvah kol chacham v'chacham yisrael v'lamed es kol atalmidim. Torah specifically tells us you have to teach all Talmidim. Any Chacham in Yisrael is required to teach all Talmidim, all Klal Yisrael, all children Klal Yisrael, really all people in Klal Yisrael. Even though they're not their own sons. Shneim Rav Yishinantam Levanecha. Mepiashmu Lamdu. We learn from Yishinantam Levanecha. Vanecha Eilu Talmidecha. Shat Talmidim Kruyim Banim. We know that Talmidim are called, the children are called, students are called children. Shenemar ve'yetsu b'nei ha'neviim. In fact, it comes to Menachem Beis that way. Ve'yetsu b'nei ha'neviim. The students of the prophets went on. But what's important to point out is that the Rambam himself already focused on b'nei ha'neviim. If you remember, when we look back in the halachos of neviim back in the Yisrael HaTorah, at the end of the Yisrael HaTorah, the Rambam himself calls b'nei neviim. Those are the students of the neviim, and he talks about those b'nei neviim being people with like the different the harps and the other instruments to be able to get the navi in the right mood to be able to get a nevuah. Okay, if you remember, great. If that's the case, why does the Torah specifically tell us the child and the grandchild? Oh, the hakim b'no v'en b'no u'v'en b'no v'en chaveiro. Teach us the following order and priorities. And keep in mind, by the way, priorities here, Baruch Hashem, we have the ability to teach people Torah now and to have access to Torah online, by Torah, and to name one of many, many examples, just that's where this file will live at some point. But there's so many opportunities to teach Torah and to access Torah for our children, our grandchildren, and other people in the world to be able to share Torah. And we've, Baruch Hashem, many of us have learned Torah, at earlier points in our lives that we could pass on and be teachers of Torah. That it's, kind of, and Baruch Hashem, many people are comfortable enough to be able to say, I have time in my day to be able to teach Torah to other people. Remember back in the day, it wasn't so simple that, parents that owned a farm needed to be dealing with the farm. And may not have had so much money, meaning the lifestyle was totally different, and it wasn't so simple just to say, we're going to devote X amount of money towards the Torah. That being said, the same thing today. How many people point out how difficult it is to pay tuition? We're going to talk about paying tuition and finances in this regard, how much one is required to expend. But nevertheless, there's definitely kind of a component here of hierarchy, says the Rambam. What is the hierarchy? So b'no comes before ben b'no. So you have to teach your son before you teach your grandson. And ben b'no, right, is before the ben chaver, before a child of your friend, meaning any random other person. So that order and that priority listing is critical. Because the Mishnah questions and asks whether or not one's descendants are over other people in general. Like, what about other descendants? What about a great grandson? Would that be in that priority? So I'm quoting here from the Shach in Yerodea. The Shach points out, Yerkasim Harashal, to Adin Leven Beno, Umevia Prisha, and the Prisha of Echasim Mishnah, Reish Perek Alam, and Lechos Talmud Torah. That's what we're reading right now. Kasim Gam Kain, Vizel Shono, the Esher de Gam Ben Beno, Chai Vahaskir Lo Milame, Vechu Adin Leven, Ben Beno. Even to your great grandson, you'd probably be Chayiv. And then they're wondering, what about if it's Ben Bito? What about if it's another form of your kind of descendants, other descendants that you'd have to kind of cheshbon out? So he's not sure that would come first before another family's child. And it turns out, Valinira the Kodem Leven Chavir, says the Shach and Yeradeya Simon Reish Men Hey, the first comment of the Shach there. The Shach says, no, actually that comes first also. I mean, this hierarchy that the Rambam specifically points out, Ben Beno, it continues on that basically anyone kind of in your descendant line would come before other people, other Jews. Okay, which is important to keep in mind. The obligation to teach another child, not your own child or your grandchild, but someone else's child, that's mechina, meaning you could teach them, bring them over, give a chabura for free. That's your obligation. But you don't have to start paying for someone else's, child or grandchild to go to learn Torah. Mishal limdo aviv chayav lamed es atmo kishiyakir shenemar ulamatam osam mishmartam las osam. Says the Rambam, guess what? If you didn't get your own kind of education from your own father, so you yourself have to start teaching yourself. Chayav lamed es atmo, teach yourself. Once you recognize the fact that you don't know, lamatam osam mishmartam las osam, you teach yourself. V'chayatam motze bechol makom shatalmid kodem lamaisa. So there are three main ideas here. So the first main idea is you have to pay for your own child to learn Torah and not someone else's. The Ramah points out, though, even if you have to pay for someone else's education, you definitely have in tzedakah. And guess what? One of the highest forms of tzedakah is to pay for someone else to learn Torah. And so therefore, one should be careful that even if you're not chayav to teach someone, pay someone else's bills, basically in tuition, whatever it may be, it is a major tzedakah to be able to give towards scholarship. That's all. The next thing is, let's say your father, so that's the first idea here. Second idea here is if your father didn't teach you, you got to teach yourself. So the Tzemach Tzedek points out something incredible here. It says, Kisha Yakir, when you recognize it. Doesn't say when you mature, when you become older, and you realize that you didn't, no one taught you, then you should teach yourself. No. Just when you recognize, which means, says the Tzemach Tzedek, the Torah specifically is even going to tell us in this case that a katan would be chayav to teach himself if he recognized that the teaching is not happening for him. So that's number two. Number three here, is basically from a Gemara in Kiddushin, on Daf Mem Beis, where there's a machlokas between a Ritarfer and a Rekiv and a Chachavim as to what one should do. Should one focus more on Maaseh or Talmud? Should one focus more on studying or doing the mitzvos? Talmud comes first, says the Rambam, passing based on the Gemara, but the Chazal says, right, Ritarfer says, no, Maaseh should be done first. It should get precedence. And Rabbi Kiva says, Limud should get precedence. Chacham said, no, study, Talmud should come precedence. Why? Because Nesha Talmud is one step up. Maybe they Maisa. Yeah, it's good to do Maisa. You have to do Maisa mitzvahs, and we have a very high focus on Maisa. But the Talmud, which is also a mitzvah, should be done for it, because that's mainly the Maisa. If I learn, then I'm going to do the Maisa correctly, especially if I never learned anything before. So I just point out that if I don't know anything, if I haven't learned anything, for sure I have to learn first. Because how am I going to do the mitzvahs? How am I going to know what to do? There ain't a Maisa, maybe the Talmud. And doing mitzvahs doesn't necessarily bring you back to learn Torah. Some people get kind of into just the regular rotation of doing, that they don't go back to start sitting down and learning Torah. And many point out that last few words, Ve'en Amas, and maybe the Talmud, is added by the Rambam. The Gemara doesn't say that last component. It just says, yeah, it's true. Talmud kodem l'maisa, and deja Talmud, maybe the maisa. Then he adds on, but by the way, maisa does not bring you to Talmud. Okay. Halacha David, who hayarotza l'mo Torah v'yesh lo ben l'mo Torah, who kodem l'vno. So this is a Gemara in Kiddushin and Daf. Chof Tesama Beis that Ravach of Yaakov sent his son to go learn Torah, because it's a question. If I have to learn Torah, if my son has to learn Torah, who comes first? So he says, you come first. So why did Ravach of Yaakov send his son? If the child is so much wiser and be able to learn it better, then the child goes first. He sent his son But it turns out he came back and he didn't master it. So he said himself, Rav Acha Rav Yaakov went over to go and learn as well. Again, Baruch Hashem, we live in a time where everyone can be able to learn Torah. But again, we're talking about tuition and finances. And sometimes these really, really play a major role in people's decisions. They should play a role. Kodem lo yibatahu. And very important, even if your child it comes first, in that case, where the child will learn it better, Lo yibatahu doesn't mean you're off the hook. No, you should still learn. Even though it is a mitzvah to teach your son, for sure, and that's a great mitzvah to do, you also have a mitzvah to teach yourself, and therefore you should keep teaching yourself. You have to make sure to teach yourself. Very nice. Okay, halacha. Hey, the olam yilmod adam Torah. So we already saw a little bit like this that the Rambam in Menuchas Beis points out the order of the way things should be done. In order, and includes business actually in there. They make sure to make money basically before marrying. And here he's getting the Torah. One should learn Torah before getting married. Why? The olam yilmod adam Torah v'achak isa isha waish im nasa isha tchila ain't died to penuya lomo. The Gemara points out, right, that your mind is going to be busy with so many other things. You're taking care of your wife, which is what you should be doing when you're married. And ultimately, you have children in mitzvah Hashem. We're taking care of them. And by the time you get busy again in making money to support other people, all these things are going to add up. Your mind is going to be so focused on all the other things, it's going to be much harder to focus on Lilma Torah. And it's incumbent upon everybody to find the time. If someone's at the point in their lives where they really feel the necessity to get married because maybe their mind is so focused on that, so that they end up can't learning Torah so well because of that. So then, of course, you should get married first, and then you should find time to learn Torah. And many point out that the first couple of years, the expenses have not built up so much, and so therefore, one should try to devote those years dafka to Lilmud Torah. Obviously, again, one should make sure that they have the money to be able to support a family. That's part and parcel of getting married and having children, etc. Many would point out that earlier on, the better in Lilmud Torah, because things, although worries at younger ages seem very, very significant, and they are, they get more expanded over time. Okay. Halacha vav, meimas hay aviv chaya lamdo Torah, when is a child father required to teach his son Torah? Misha yaskil adamba lamdo. Once he starts to talk, you should start teaching him. Torah tzivlon Moshe. Teach him Torah tzivlon Moshe. Right? Ushma yisol ha-shem ha-kem ha-shem ha-chod. V'achar kach lamdo, ma'am ha-psukim, psukim, ad she'yye, ben sheish, ben sheva, ha-kol lefi bryo. Umolicho eitzel melamit yonkos. Until they're about 6 or 7, you should keep teaching them psukim, psukim, psukim. Lots of psukim they should learn. Major psukim. And they should keep learning it. And then at that point, they should be taught by melamids to atinokos. You should send them off to school, essentially. Which is very similar to what many of us do. And although in Avos, if you look in Pirkei Avos in Perek Hey, Mishnah Chaf Beis, over there it says you should start teaching Torah Shabbat at the age of 5. The Rambam here says to start earlier. Clearly, the Rambam disagrees with that idea. Formally at the age of 5, or maybe here he's saying 6 or 7, depending on kind of the age and the capacity of the child. But nevertheless, you still have to start teaching them something at these younger ages. The children are sponges at these ages. And you got to teach them, says the Rambam, even psukim, kind of on a day-to-day basis. Kevaldik. Halacha Zion. So if you're in a place where the Malami accepts money for teaching, children Torah, so then you have to pay them Torah. You have to pay them to teach them Torah Shabbat entirely, and that's when you're chayav to keep paying until. In that case, if it's a place where they people charge, so then the actual teacher can charge money in that place. If it's Torah Shabbat Peh, you can't teach it for money. Says Moshe Avenu, look at this, I'm teaching you the Chukim Mishpatim. Guess what? I learned it Bechinam. God didn't ask me to pay when I went out to learn 40 days, 40 nights, right? I didn't eat any drink in this parasha today. Moshe Rabbeinu refers to the fact that he didn't eat and drink twice. Right? He talks about the experience of learning the Torah, going up there for 40 days, 40 nights, didn't eat, didn't drink. Right? He was up there, but it was bechinam. It was for free. So if it was for free in that case, I learned the Torah for free, says Moshe Rabbeinu, and then I taught it to you, and that was for free too. I didn't charge you. So if that's the case, you have to now teach it to the next generations also for free. And I wanted to point out that that's perhaps also why the Rambam starts off with talking about teaching the son, because the entire entity of Talmud Torah, the entire entity of teaching Torah is all about teaching the next generation, that the next generation should hold on to the Masorah and should carry it on one generation to the next. And so that's why the entire entity, the entire concept of Limud Torah starts with teaching your son and making sure your children have the mitzvahs and the Torah to be able to pass on themselves to the next generation. Only later on is point, if you didn't get taught, you need to teach yourself Torah. And by the way, even if you're teaching your son, you still need to teach yourself Torah because it's constantly your obligation. Okay? Because we don't want you to forget. We'll see that in a little bit also. Says the Rambam, if it's in a place, again, that they accept money, basically everyone accepts money, so you can accept money also, but not for Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah Sheba'al Peh, you can't accept money and you can't charge, you can't pay money. You can't accept money for it. What happens if you can't find someone to learn to teach your child for free? Then in that case, again, you should pay. In those cases, you should go and run after and go and buy MS. You would have thought maybe I'm the teacher and maybe since everybody else is charging, I should be able to charge. No, the Al Timkor, you can't sell it. You can buy it, you can't sell it. Even if you pay your own teacher to teach you in Torah, you yourself shouldn't be charging the next generation money to charge for teaching Torah Sheba'al Peh. And the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam talk about a number of different ways of kind of looking around this. One of them is you could potentially charge a person for not going into another profession. That's not like a loophole. That's actually a very, very important point. So many very wise chachamim, if they wouldn't be able to make a parnasa through teaching Torah, so many of them, they happen to be so wise here, they'd probably be wise in all other areas of making money as well. So they'd go and make money elsewhere. We wouldn't have them as part of our community to devote themselves to Talmud Torah and to passing shilas, et cetera, et cetera. They'd have to make a living from somewhere else. So they'd go off and do other things. So the fact that they aren't doing that, you're not paying them stuff to teach, you're paying them so that they're not doing other things and that they're available. And that's an important kind of perspective here to be able to accept money in those cases. I'm talking about a number of these things. They bring a raya potentially from the Beis HaMikdash used to pay out of the funds of the Beis HaMikdash to teach, that teachers should teach young Kohanim the halachas of Shechita. They also point out that authors who write Svarim can demand pay for that as well. They could charge to sell their Svarim, etc. So all these things kind of are ways around this halacha, but at the very core, that is the halacha itself. Kol ish miyisrael halacha chas chayav l'talmud Torah ben ani ben asher ben shalim ben gufo ben baal yisurin ben bachur ben shahaya zaken gadol shechashash shetashash kocho afilu haya ani mefarnes min hatzdaka mechazal apsachim afilu bal isho vanim chayav l'kbalos man l'talmud Torah b'yom v'layla shenem v'yisabo yom v'layla. Okay, so every man in Kriyasol is chayiv, is obligated to learn Talmud Torah, whether they are poor or they're rich, whether they're healthy or they're not unhealthy, whether they're young or whether they're old and they no longer have koach, and even in Ani, even these poor people that we're talking about, these are people that get money from tzedakah, or they walk around and collect from door to door, or they have, even that person collects from door to door, afilu baal ishavanim, even if they have children and they have a wife, they have to make money. No, they still have an obligation, likbol ozman, they still have the obligation to set up some time, the Talmud Torah b'yom u'v'layla, in the day and the night, shnei rabbeisu b'yom u'v'layla. And that's very, very important to keep in mind. Even the rich and even the poor need to do this. The Gemara in Yoma points out that Hillel obligates the poor people, Relazim and Chersum obligates the rich people. Hillel didn't make too much money, and he still, was one of our Gedolei Yisrael generations, Gedolei Masora. And Relazim and Chersum basically apparently had like thousands of of boats and thousands of cities and never saw them once, and all he would do was focus on learning Torah. Meaning, why would you say that a rich person shouldn't kind of be chayav? What would be a poor person? Kind of obvious. Poor person, you need to make money for your family. You need to make money for yourself to be able to put food on the table. Okay, so maybe there's a p'tur from learning Torah. He says, no p'tur. Go learn Torah at least a little bit in the morning, a little bit at night. What about a rich person? Shouldn't it be obvious? Well, as many people probably could point out, a rich person has a lot of obligations. They have a lot of things to be busy with. They have a lot of things in the community to be helpful with. They have a lot of time devoted to making sure that they don't lose all that money and that they don't no one's lives get destroyed because of that money, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of obligations to come along with all that money. And so therefore, maybe you would think they're putter. The answer is no, they're not putter. Even if you have tons and tons of money, tons of property, tons of things to be busy with, you still have to be involved. Same thing with healthy and afflicted. Each one of them, you can come up with an excuse as to why not to learn Torah, but you still have an obligation to learn Torah. And what's important to point out here also is that there are two components of Limud Torah. There's one component of Limud Torah in general, which is you have to constantly learn Torah. There's an obligation to constantly be learning Torah. I have to go and do other things as part of living. Okay, so you go make a little bit of money to make sure that go do good works in this world. Go do chesed. Go do davening, tefillah, etc., etc. All those things are wonderful things. Each person will assess how much time they could devote in their day, and probably everyone should be pushing themselves to devote a little bit more time to Limud Torah. But then there's an additional obligation, which is, right, and that obligation again is to learn the entire Torah, and constantly learning, and you're never done with it. You see in a moment that I'm going to say the last day of your life, that's when you're done learning Torah, because it's a constant obligation. But at a very basic level, everyone is obligated to l'kvoazman, kivisa, right, kivisa, bo'itim l'Torah. You're right, that's one of the questions that you're going to be asked when you go up to Shemayim. Did you set up time to learn Torah? And it's not only just setting up time, it's setting up time in the morning, it's setting up time in the nighttime. Every single day, you said, this is a part of what my life needs to be. I can't go through a day where I'm not learning Torah. Impossible. You have to be involved with Yom V'Laila could be constantly, but at the very least, it means I need something in the morning, something at night, something that starts with my day correctly, something that ends with my day correctly. And again, Baruch Hashem, we live in a time where you can put little AirPods in your ears and you could be sitting on your way going to work, whatever it is. Obviously, now we're not, people aren't going to work right now, they're doing work from their homes. But still, before going to do anything, you can put on a shir and you listen to Torah, and the same thing at night. You can listen to a shir at night, and maybe you open a sefer. You're going to learn. There's so many different opportunities to be able to learn Torah today. Again, the yisav yom v'layla to be able to set up time and say, this is what I'm going to be learning. I want to make sure that I'm learning Torah. Givaldi. Just in case we missed the point here, Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael, Hayu Mehen, Chotei Eitzin, Umehen, Shravei Mayim, Umehen, Sumim, Yavah Pichein, Hayu Oskim Etal Metorah Vayom Velaylo, Vehem Neklal, Ma'atiki Ashmua, Ish Mipi, Moshe Rabbeinu. There are so many Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael that were wood choppers or water drawers or blind men. Again, these are not, either major paying jobs or being blind is not an easy lifestyle. Nevertheless, they were major Gedolei Yisrael, and they learned Torah Yom V'Laila all day and all night. And they're from the people that are part of the Mesoda of Moshe Rabbeinu, each VP, each one to the next, the next to the next. Involved in that Mesoda is Givaldik, and therefore, again, even if one has the challenges in their lives, everyone has challenges, Baruch Hashem, in their lives. Some have greater challenges, some have less challenges. You can't judge anyone's challenges. Everyone has their own challenges. But there's an opportunity to be able to devote oneself to Limud Torah, and that's incredible. As we just pointed out, the Rambam says, when are you chayav to learn Torah? Maybe, 60, 75, like retire from the Torah. No! Until the end of one's life. One is not learning Torah, they're going to forget it. Some people point out, including the smag and the smack, they both count. Actually, that's one of the mitzvos that Alota say not to forget one's Torah. And point out, you can't actively go and forget one's Torah. You can't actively go and destroy memories for whatever it is, and actively forget one's Torah. If someone forgets Torah, unfortunately, because of other, their minds are not, Cam Jansen, where they don't have a photographic, memory. So, okay, that's why you have to constantly be learning it, says the Rambam, because if you're constantly learning it, you won't forget it. If you're constantly involved in it, you won't forget it. You can't learn it and then put it away forever. No, you have to go back and review. That's exactly what learning Torah is all about. says the smack on the smack, that's the mitzvah's losa, say dafka, not to forget one's Torah. The Rambam doesn't include that here. Some people point out, maybe that's because the Rambam is saying that it's part and parcel of the mitzvah, the little Torah in the first place, that I need to learn Torah. If I'm learning Torah, then I'm not going to forget, because I'm constantly going over and over and over again. Okay. Again, this is a secondary component. Again, constant involvement in Torah is different than Vigisa Bivam Alayla. People point out that two different components. One is making sure you have something in day and night to have consistency in Lima Torah, and one of them is making sure that you're constantly involved in Lima Torah ad Yom Moso until the end of one's life. Okay, there's no retirement from Lima Torah. If anything, it gets more basically once one's older, you're living off of whatever savings one has in retiring from work, and more of an obligation to limit Torah at that point. Okay? So now we're talking about how should one learn Torah, what they should be involved with. Split up your time by three. One third in Torah Shabbatav in the written law, and one in the oral law, one third. Basically, this last one is called Gemara. Again, this last one is basically understanding, conceptualizing the derivation, basically, from things from where they come from. Essentially, right, the idea to learn how, what is the process by which we learn the oral law, and what are the ideas kind of that are behind it, until one really appreciates the essence of those ideas, and basically how we receive them, basically from one lima to the next. Okay, so that's halacha yud aleph, and that's again one third. How should I do that? Haya baal umanos. Let's say he's a craft person, right? And he's only working 3 hours. Again, remember, that's different than I would argue with most people today. Right? 3 hours he's working, but Torah teisha, and he's giving 9 hours to learning Torah. Okay, so we should assess how many hours we're putting into learning Torah nowadays. Osana teisha kore b'shalosh b'hen b'torah shabbat. 3 of those hours you should give to Torah shabbat. B'shalosh b'torah shabbat. 3 Torah shabbat. U'b'shalosh tacheres mitzvonei v'daito v'avin adover b'zachar. And third, in the last category, Gemara is really going into the depths of it. V'divrei Kabbalah. And what about this category, kind of words of prophetic tradition? As it's sort of translated, Michlal Torah Shibakhtavi. That's Torah Shibakhtavi, Rashim, Michlal Torah Shibalpe. So the words themselves, that's Torah Shibakhtav. The ideas of how we were Pirushim, explaining them, that's Torah Shibalpe. Vain Yemen, they cry in Paradise. When we were talking about Paradise, Michlal, like Gemara Hain. Those are part of Gemara. And those are part of that latter category, kind of a deeper thinking, deeper growing one's own mind to be able to learn the Torah correctly in the deepest way. So what are we talking about when we say one third? That's with chilas tamudo shel adam, beginning of one's learning. And the beginning of learning can happen when they're young, can happen when they're older, depending on when they started, or Akiva started later on. Once they got in the higher and higher in their chachma, they don't have to constantly be involved in the Torah Shabbatav, Torah Shabbatav components. Yikra ve'itin mezumanim Torah Shabbatav. You still have to do the first two categories. You still have to do a little bit. Make sure that you're constantly engaged in it, not to forget it. Again, this is once you've already mastered that, then you can move on to this next category. But basically, the idea is do the first two categories until you really master them well, and then continue to review them so you don't forget them, but then focus most of your time and energy on the latter category. Okay, that's halacha yud beis. And the last halacha here, isha, shalom the Torah. What about a woman that does learn Torah? We said that there's not chayavos. So what about she does? So again, we're going to point out exactly what the Rambam says here, and then I'll bring a number of different additional approaches at the end. Isha shalom the Torah, yesh lo schar, aval eino, kischar ish. So very basic level, right? A woman that does learn Torah, there is schar for that. There's reward for that learning limud Torah. It's not the same as the schar of a man. Why? Yesh lo, it's the base. Because she's not obligated to close. So davar she'eino mitzuva alav. So ein scharok is schar hametzuba she also ela papas meno. Right? So it's not the same if you are obligated to do something and you do it, and if you are not obligated to do something and you do it now, you conceptually might have said, wait a second, if I'm not obligated to do something and I volunteer to do it, doesn't that make me a better person? The answer is no. Many people point out that the schar is kind of on the same playing field as kind of the yetzer hara, let's say, put it that way. The inclination to dafka, not do something, only exists when you're obligated to do it. But if you're not obligated to do it, that inclination to not do it is not as great. And so therefore, some argue that that's where the schar shifts basically in that direction. Okay, but ultimately, the Gemara points out that gadol metzuva osa mishenu metzuva osa. It's greater to be obligated to do something and do something than not obligated to do something. But there's still schar. Be'avavishi yesh l'schar. Okay, now, even though there is a schar here, one shouldn't teach their own daughter Torah. Says the Rambam, Chazal tell it, don't teach a daughter because they can't concentrate on the learning. And it'll ultimately turn into idle matters because of lack of understanding. Since they can't understand it, again, remember, at the time of the Rambam, women were not necessarily literate. And therefore, the Rambam is saying, if you're trying to teach them something and they're not going to be able to understand it, so it's going to ultimately be idle matters. And since they're not chayavos, so then don't focus on it. Because I'll say, if you teach your daughter Torah, it's like teaching them tales and parables. That's one way of translating Tiflos. Another explanation of Tiflos coming from the Meiri directly is vanity. He argues that they're going to boast of their achievements if you teach them Torah. But again, there's their legitimate translation that this is, it's like teaching tales and parables. Ultimately, it's like teaching ideas. But again, if they couldn't understand it, so then you're not teaching them what is the ikar of what it is supposed to be taught. Okay. We're talking about Torah Shebechtav. But when it comes to Torah Shebechtav, written law, so written Torah, so that you shouldn't necessarily run after to go do. But if you don't, if you did, then it's okay. Again, point out a number of things. Number one is some would say, no, you still have to make sure. This is only in the category, again, it's not what the Rambam is expressing, but many poskim, as we pointed out at the very beginning, many poskim would point out, no, if a woman has to do mitzvos, they have to know the halachos of doing those mitzvos, you have to really know those halachos well of the areas of the Torah that they need to do. So on a very low level, this wouldn't be included here, presumably. That's number one. Number two is, he says here, that most, if they rove hanashim ein daita mechavenes, that most women here are not in the category of people that basically be able to understand the Torah. Again, that's in his time, perhaps, and we'll go to some updates of that in a moment. But the preacher points out, just even on that line, that if your daughter is not from the rove, then you probably are, and from the miut, meaning from the minority, again, at the time of the Rambam, that if your daughter was one of the women who were part of the minority, as opposed to the majority of people wouldn't be able to understand it, but women wouldn't be able to understand it. These women would be able to understand it, says the preacher, maybe you have a different chiyuv there, the dafka teach your daughter in that situation, because she's not, it's not really a tiflus that's going to be like tales and parables, but rather she actually could understand what it is that she's being taught, and so perhaps that's there as well. I do want to point out a number of different points. One is, again, I'm quoting a number of things from Seeking His Presence conversations with Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Chaim Sabato. It's the English translation of it. I'm not sure who did the translation, but on a very basic level, just a couple of quotes here. The Rav did not approach this, namely women learning Torah, to desire to be on the cutting edge. He thought, this is Rav Lichtenstein quoting, talking about the Rav, he thought it was objectively good for women to learn Torah. Okay, that's one thing. He points out that the Rav venerated Torah study. Right? There's a bit about Torah that he truly believed, and quoting again, that God created the evil inclination and created the Torah as the antidote to it. He felt that the evil inclination was no less potent in women than men. So if you don't send them to universities, you remove them from the intellectual cultural milieu, but sending them to universities unarmed in the antidote of the Torah to protect them is irresponsible, right? Without the antidote of the Torah, it would be irresponsible, right? Since he was in favor of women getting a broad education and being integrated into high culture, he therefore thought that it was very important that they study Torah intensely. In any event, even without the cultural risks and dangers, he supported their learning Torah. Okay, so that is important. Two components of Rav Soloveitchik's perspective, quote again, coming from the Lichtenstein. One of them is simply that if they're going to be selling so many other things, and their minds clearly are capable of all of that, right? Again, and which Baruch Hashem, we're at a state in time where my daughter is Baruch Hashem just as capable of understanding, unlike it seems like, again, they're literate in the same way as our sons are. And we're saying that the university is PhD, et cetera, et cetera, similar to Soloveitchik, in that situation, to send them off into the world without the antidote, basically, of what Torah provides would be irresponsible. But he says, on top of that, he says, right, even beyond that, he supported the learning Torah. And he talks about when Star Shneur went to open Beit Yaakov, went to ask the Chafetz Chaim, and I had not heard this, I've heard that the Chafetz Chaim, gave the okay, but I haven't heard this argument directly in a while. Chafetz Chaim responded that according to the Rambam, when a potential convert is taught about the mitzvot, he should be informed some of the easier mitzvot and some of the more severe mitzvot. And he was also informed of the fundamentals of faith. Is it conceivable that a woman who wishes to convert will learn the fundamentals of the faith, whereas a woman who was born to a Jewish mother in a Jewish home would not? Why should her portion be diminished? Okay, so again, and there's plenty more to talk here, but on a very basic level, the entire Beis Yaakov movement already made a major shift here, and if you look in the studying of what happens in Israel from Mechala being the origin of all this and so many other Torah institutions teaching all different portions of Limud Torah, including things that specifically are focused, again, there may be distinctions here about whether or not it should be focused primarily on things that are directly, one that's directly chayav to learn. Again, because of, as we pointed out, so many posts can point out that women are chayavos to learn components of Torah that do apply to them in their lives, Shabbos, Yom Tovim, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Kashrus, Nida, right? All so many different areas of halacha that directly apply. So maybe that should take precedence, and others have different perspectives. I'm not going to go into that discussion right now, but clearly, again, things have changed over time, starting again with the Chafetz Chaim, and continuing at Yom HaZeh, things have changed in the kind of sphere since the time of the Rambam. On a very basic level, again, and if you just read the Rambam directly, the idea that the reason for not being, or the Chacham taught not to do this, is because they should rova nashim, ain't that mechavenes lelamed elahin metzias, right? So rova nashim, and again, point rosh hanashim, right? And the point taken that if they were in the mirror at that point, says the Prisha, already you have to think differently. Well, maybe everyone's kind of in the mirror at this point, or now this has become the new rove. So things are worthwhile to consider. Again, we're learning the Rambam right now. This is what the Rambam says, and it's important to learn the Rambam the way the Rambam said it. Again, let's go over a little bit of Chazara. So what did the Rambam say? Very beginning, who's Potter? Nashim, Vadim, and Kitanim. The sons still need to be taught Torah, and there's a chiyuv on the fathers to teach the Torah, not the mothers, although we pointed out there are obligations on the mother as well. So that is who's Potter. And ultimately, then we focus on the obligation to teach a son is not only on one son, but it's also on a grandson. Then we pointed out not only grandson, but maybe on other family members, and those would all come before the next category, which is all potential Talmidim, because Talmidim are considered like sons, like we see with B'nai Nevi'im. So all of that basically would be our obligation. You only have to pay for your child to learn Torah. You're not necessarily kind of to pay for someone else's children to learn Torah, although we pointed out, it came from the Ramah, that there's a mitzvah tzedakah, that's a very important one. And then we pointed out that if the son is wiser, the son gets precedence, but usually just the father would get precedence if it was one or the other. But even if the son goes, the father should still learn Torah themselves. And then we pointed out that they should first study and then get married so you could have time to be able to study. Then we pointed out that the child should be taught their basic psukim, and then as they get older, they should learn more and more. Paying for Torah, shebechtav would be acceptable, Torah shebalpeh wouldn't it be acceptable. We've talked about how things have happened in kind of the day-to-day living today, so to speak, potentially charge for a different profession, for example, if we're not going into a different profession as opposed to directly paying for it. But the Rambam says it's directly us to charge to teach Torah Shebaal Peh. Everyone is chayav to learn Torah, whether they're poor, rich, etc., etc., or and even until the day that they die, essentially, they're always chayav to learn Torah. We point out that there's a chayav to learn in the morning and at night. Plus, there's also a chayav to constantly be learning, and those are two components of the mitzvah of Limud Torah. One should divide the limud into three categories, we pointed out, and that all exists while we still need to learn all three of those categories, but the first two categories, when they are done well enough, then you can focus more of your attention on the third category. And at the very end here, point out whether one should or should not teach their daughters Torah. The Rambam points out here that there is obviously from Chazal a negative perspective on that. And again, we pointed out that things have changed from the Chavetz Chaim's time, Yom Hazeh, and perhaps we pointed out that may be due to the word ro or other kind of understandings of this Rambam. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. We will continue now. We'll continue next with the second parak of the Halachos of Talmud Torah.